For our first episode of 2025, we have a returning podcast guest and an absolute favorite. Tyler Moore, also known to many of us as Tidy Dad, is back to share about his book titled Tidy Up Your Life that just launched this week. As a note, we had a few issues with the audio, which were entirely my fault. I hope you will still enjoy this thoughtful conversation with Tyler. So welcome back, Tyler. I'm so happy to have you.
Yeah, thanks, Carly, for having me back.
So you are here to talk about your book, Tidy Up Your Life, which comes out in January. I just read it in the past couple of days. And before we started recording, I've already been raving about how special it was to me. I tried not to read any hints ahead of time or read any previews. I just wanted to jump into it. And I absolutely loved the way that it sounded and felt like you, the Tyler I knew from following on Instagram, but had so much richness to both your story and your advice that I haven't seen yet on Instagram. So I enjoyed reading it so much. You have a large platform on Instagram. You have a thriving blog. You have places that you can share these things on other platforms with your audience. What made you choose to write a book?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I feel like it's one that my family asked me, my friends asked me, my wife asked. As you know, taking on writing a book, it's really a monumental sort of project. But I felt so passionately about wanting to be able to capture this season of my life. So this season where I'm trying hard, sort of like survive, because we have the three young kids at home. I'm a teacher by day, but also really thrive in our space and in our environment. We live in New York City and we love where we live. And I really wanted to be able to sort of encapsulate all that I've learned over the past few years as I really have sought to tidy up different aspects of my life and really come up with almost like a manual, a guide that people could come back to when they're facing difficult seasons of life. Because as we know, life is there are moments where we feel like everything is just thriving, you know, like we're can work, you know, we have all of these steps that we've put into place and we feel like we're on this very straight trajectory and things are good. But then there will be that little curve that's thrown your way. And sometimes you think, what am I going to do and be able to sort of handle that or process that? And so with your life, you know, the subtitle is it's rethinking how to organize, declutter, and make space for what matters most. And I do think that with tidying, there's the physical process of tidying up the aesthetics of our space, but there also is the mental health aspect of what does it look like to tidy up our career, our finances, our family, our relationships, our hobbies, our interests, our passion, in order to truly make space for, as you know, with your own Instagram platform, it's really hard sometimes to capture all of this in 15 with the trending audio and the caption that's going to get people to read and learn. And so I do feel like it's really nice to now have this guide that I can then continue to build out content from. So, you know, bring people back to as a resource.
Yeah. And the act of sitting down to read a book already lends your mind towards slowing down and being thoughtful. And so I think it just puts your audience in a better posture to learn the things that you're trying to say instead of scrolling through and your one in a million reels that they're seeing. Like when they sit down to read a book, it's that intentional time set aside to think and process one thing. And I think this topic is important enough to do that. So I'm a big reader. So I love that you chose to put all of those thoughts into a book format. I have lots of little smiley faces that I drew in the book as I was reading, of just like hearing your, just like the jokes and the humor. Because again, I could hear your voice in it, but I've heard so many parts of your story that I hadn't heard before, of how you arrived at the point of really feeling like it was a make or break, of you needed to tidy up. It wasn't just, oh, I'm bored, I might as well try tidying up. You really came to it out of a necessity that ultimately led to something beautiful, but was very hard initially. And so I think giving your audience the context for what happened before Tidy Dad existed, I think that's something I struggle to communicate on Instagram too, is I started this Instagram in 2019, but I had a whole life up to that that didn't look the way it does now. And that's what led to starting that. And so that's what I saw in your book here. So you have these two sections in the book, tidy up your mind first, right? Before you can tidy up your space. So can you talk a little bit about what is it, how did you realize that physical clutter and that mental clutter were so connected?
Yeah. And I think that that distinction was really important to draw in the book, because so often physical clutter can be a manifestation of the mental clutter that we feel. But I do find that many times the process that you use that I outline in the book for decluttering, which is the idea of clearing, you sort of assess what you have, then you make a plan for what you're going to do with it. You can actually apply that to different aspects of your life. And so I think it was really important to draw those parallels, because what I don't want people to think is that I'm this like dad and teacher who just has it all together and has always had it together, because that is the case. I mean, I always had strategies that I used in order to maintain some tidiness to my life. But I unpack in the first part of the book that there was also some pain, especially when I was growing up as a kid and I experienced my parents' divorce, that when you go through, you know, I was in the eighth grade, when you go through that, just sort of radically changes the fabric of your family, that inherently has an impact on you. And in my, you know, I didn't know many kids who had parents who were divorced. In my community, it wasn't really commonplace. Like, well, I did have one house, now I have two houses. Mm-hmm. And so for decades, I worked to make it appear that I had everything together. Because mm-hmm. oftentimes, when we appear to others that we have it all together, there's then this feeling that we have of like acceptance or love or admiration that then can get us through those rockier times. And so when I was a brand new dad, having a 2-year-old and a 7-month-old at home, when I felt the weight of the positional responsibilities that I had taken on at work, we had also upsized the number of people that lived in our really small apartment. And at the same time, a lot of our friends were moving out of the city, because the question that people always get when they live in New York City is, so how long are you going to live there? Even though we've now lived here over a decade, whenever I go back home, there's always that question of, how long are you going to live there? And we were really wrestling with, are we going to be able to make life in this city sustainable? And I was also wrestling with, am I going to be able to make this career as a school administrator sustainable? While at the same time, I was wrestling with, I really just want to spend more time with my kids. I really want to, you know, I saw just what my wife was going through as well. You know, she was balancing being an occupational therapist. She was caring for our girls part-time. I would then literally run home to relieve her so that she could go to her afternoon sessions. We were trying our best to balance it, but something really felt off, which was then when some of those tidying sort of processes had to come into place. I mean, as I outline in the book, I also basically imploded our apartment because I had the wonderful idea that we needed to switch bedrooms with the girls. I didn't listen to my wife, and I thought, I'm just going to do this and prove to her how great it is. But I do feel like the implosion of our space was a really beautiful metaphor to weave out throughout this first part of the book, because, you know, the physical clutter and the mental clutter, they so often go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. And I found that actually sorting through all of our physical stuff then helped me sort through all of the mental and emotional stuff that I was going through.
I loved when you shared about the social worker at school. Yeah. You were working with someone, and when she shared with you that she had been in this larger manager role and then chosen to go, quote unquote, backwards in her career in order to, you know, be with her kids, that was a eye-opener then for you to be like, to pause and say, maybe I could do the same kind of thing. And maybe that manager role is not helping serve what you want your family dynamic to look like. But sometimes those things, as we look back, that's such a simple solution. Or that's such an obvious solution maybe. But in the moment, it's really not, because there's these large unspoken and then sometimes spoken expectations on the course of our life, the trajectory of our life, what we should do by a certain age. And I have found that as I get older, sometimes that pressure just keeps mounting, because it's okay, now you're in your 30s, now you're in your mid 30s, you should be on this trajectory. And then it often comes to a head of just, I can't do that anymore. I cannot live up to someone else's, these imaginary expectations that I've created for myself, and the giant gap between what I feel like is expected or assumed of me and what I'm actually experiencing in the quiet of my mind. And that is so crushing. That's so hard to realize and let go of. And so as you made that choice to go from an administrator role, like you talked about in the book, going step one, step two, step three, you felt like it was all laid out exactly how you should go. And then you chose to go backwards from admin back into teaching. How did you work through some of the, what are people going to think of me if I do that? Or how am I going to show up and be the teacher that used to be the admin? Can you talk about deciding that was the choice that was right for your family?
There was a pivotal question that my therapist at the time asked me. And therapy for me, at first, it was one of those things that I felt was just a financial luxury. And I remember consciously talking to my wife about it. It had been part covered through insurance, but then every week there was this like $60 copay. And I remember at the, you know, we had the two little girls. I had a teacher salary. My wife was working as an occupational therapist. We're living in New York City. We're trying to, you know, childcare. And how are we handling the influx of all of these new expenses that oftentimes comes with kids? And I remember us about, like, is this a financial sort of hardship that we should take on? And when I say hardship, like, it was really difficult for me to spend money in a way that I felt was selfish. And why I felt at the time that it was selfish was because it was me going to the therapist's office. This was before the days of like tele, you know, this was pre-COVID where you physically went in places. I remember, you know, I had to negotiate at school being able to get off a little bit early. We had the cost with the copay. I was balancing insurance. But why that relates to the question is because I remember my therapist saying, I really need you to explore what would happen if you don't make this choice. Like, I really want you to play out. Like, you have this feeling that you need to return back to the classroom. Okay, you can trust that, you can go with that. Or let's play out the alternative and what would likely happen. And so playing out that scenario, and it's sort of like that we were talking before about that like cost benefit and sort of like thinking about what would happen. When I really played that out, it was not something that I was willing to do. It wasn't a gamble that I was willing to take. And so then the next thought was, oh my gosh, what are all the teachers going to say? Because I went from being an admin at the same school and then was going to return to the classroom and essentially begin teaching alongside the teachers that I had just supervised. So, you know, I really had to think, what are they going to say? I remember, you know, having the meeting with my principal and saying, I would like to step back. And then I found this teacher that I'm still friends with today. Her name is Keisha Omosoria. And I went to her and I was like, Keisha, I just told my principal that I'm going to step back. And her immediate thought was, or what she said to me that I'll always remember is she said, you did that because you are a really good dad. That's why you made that decision. And that was the first, it was just such a beautiful moment because I was like, it's going to be okay. This is someone that I've known for, and for her first thought to not be, oh my gosh, are people going to accept you again? Oh my gosh, you are going back? Like, you took a demotion? Oh my gosh, what are you going to do about pay? How are people going to look at you? How are people going to view you? What are your friends going to say? No, she immediately connected it back to a value that I had communicated to others. And that was so beautiful. And so I feel like oftentimes we build up in our minds how we think things are going to go. We catastrophize. And oftentimes catastrophizing things can, you know, dissuade us from doing something. But the alternative is sometimes you lean into not really knowing how it's going to go. And sometimes, like one of the other analogies in the book or phrases I talk about, this idea of a beautiful mess, like that really was a beautifully messy sort of season, but I had to lean into what I knew was going to be best for me and for my family.
Yeah, I think as much as we would not like to believe that this is that middle school limelight syndrome, doesn't actually, it fades and kind of softens in adulthood, but I think it is still there of we think other people think about us a lot more than they actually do. Of we allow the possibility that someone else might be like, oh, that's weird, or that he must not have been very good at that job if he had to go back. We let all of those possibilities impact these major decisions in our life when really, one, they're probably not going to think that. And two, even if they do, why should that change what we do anyways, right? But we get, it is so easy to get swept up into that. And something I think about a lot in money that I think resonates with that job too is a lot of times the wisest financial choice we can make is going to be the one that looks like we are in a bad position. So for example, selling a new car and trading it in for something that's 15 years older, people will think, oh, they're really hurting for money. When really that was the most financially wise choice they could have made. And that person is now even better off than they were before. But it's just the appearance of things that sometimes so hard to get over, so hard to be willing to initiate that. I saw that so much in your story in the book of like, you were becoming this truer version of yourself, of knowing confidently who you were and being willing to let that be different than what other people were doing, which I think leads really nicely into the next thing I want to talk about of just enough. That was what you were finding, was that you were stepping out of what anyone else expected you to have and instead defining just enough. So for listeners, can you tell me just briefly, what is the idea of just enough?
Yeah. So the idea of just enough is being able to establish in any given category, what is the just enough amount that you may need in order to be able to sustain sort of whatever sort of aspect of life you may want. And there are some like tangible examples of like, if you're an skier, you know, being able to name for yourself, what are the amount of skis that you need? You can't have 15 pair of skis, but like, what do you need in terms of your skis and your boots? And, you know, it could be with your career. It could be the amount of hours that you feel comfortable working in a given week in order to be able to have like the quality of life that you want and able to be able to balance career with family. So I do feel like, because one of the questions that I get a lot is if we're minimalists. Mm-hmm. And so minimalism is a very helpful principle that works for a lot. But I, you know, trying to reduce the overall quantity of items, getting it down to the lowest point is actually something that's not very motivating for me or even for my family. So if I identify like what are the areas in my life that are really important to me, I then can sort of figure out, okay, what is just enough in this particular area? And another example is like the square footage of our apartment. It's 750 square feet. We have 5 people. We have 1 bathroom. 1 bathroom right now is just enough. We get tons of questions about what's going to happen when our daughters are teenagers. And we say, well, we're not living with teenagers yet. And we'll pivot if need be. We'll figure out. But in New York City, if we were to have a second bathroom, we would essentially need to double the rent that we're currently paying. And so right now, this one bathroom is just enough because it then frees up those other financial resources in order to be able to do X, Y, or Z in other categories that we really...
Yeah, I love that. And I love that it's individual. I love that the unlike a purely minimalism approach that would look at what other people are doing and say, oh, you have too much of that thing. The just enough idea is only a question for you and your household of what's just enough to us. I loved the little story in there about the 5 different kinds of blocks that you didn't want 5 kinds of blocks because you thought they were the same. And to Emily, who was an occupational therapist, she's no, they're all different. And so this minimalist house has 5 different kinds of blocks. And that's what was just enough for you. And I love too, I think, because so many of your audience and mine are parents, I think it's very validating to accept that as you have little kids, their rate of development is rapid and they're also all unique unto themselves. So you're just going to have more things. The revolving door is maybe spinning a little faster in this phase of life than it would at another phase of life. And that's not something we need to resist. I think, especially for kids, if we were constantly telling them, oh, we don't need that. You need to get rid of that. That would be so crushing to them because they have their own little mini version of just enough that might mean keeping the craft bin and keeping the sparkly thing that gets everywhere. It causes you to pause and ask yourself what's valuable to you, but it also it causes you to think inward instead of having a comparison mindset. And I loved you said the goal is not to remove things. It's just to make space for what's really important to you. And in order to do that, you have to know what's really important to you. And that's that tidying up your mind, that giving yourself, clearing out and giving yourself space so that you can actually define what's important for you.
Yeah. And I feel like that relates to budgeting, which you talk about a lot, because it isn't just about reduce, 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 or edit, edit, or eliminate, eliminate, eliminate. Mm-hmm. Like that isn't fully practical or realistic. And so you can't cut everything out all at once. Yeah. Just like if you're going to declutter, you can't say we're throwing everything out right. That's not fully realistic. And so the focus edit, edit, edit can actually be really defeating. And so it's just like what you mentioned. I think that that just enough can be really helpful and powerful, not just for the physical objects, but also for something like your finances and being able to name, like, what is just enough ordering out right now? You just want the freedom of one night a week that we're not cooking? Okay, then let's do that on Fridays. But that's very different from a budget standpoint of saying, okay, you know, for me, it's like just enough is like ordering out four nights a week. Like that thing where the family or individuals or people sort of has to come to a healthy, a happy sort of like medium and be able to figure out what is just enough for us in this current season. And I feel like when you name in this current season, that does not mean that it's going to be ever, you know, it's
Yeah. The visual I like to give is seesawing the budget of like, we're not trying to make everything come down. We're trying to make the things that matter less come down so that the things that matter more can go up. Like planning out your money, it should open doors and it should increase the possibilities you have. I think your, you know, the tidying and cleaning, like it should make way for more joy. It should make open doors. It shouldn't feel like it's restrictive and it's pressure and it's adding to your life. It should make space for what matters. And I love that you went about that process of decluttering and then tidying and now, you know, regularly cleaning, that you have evidence in your videos and in your content and in your trips that you are actually able to do that. You're actually living proof of like people being able to see, okay, they do live in a much smaller house than me, but they also go on a trip that I don't normally do. So maybe those two things actually can coexist.
It's interesting with our daughters, because it was a few months ago, my oldest daughter, she was like, Daddy, are we as rich as such and such family member? Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, say more about that. And she's like, well, we live in such a small space, but they have like a mansion. And so it brought up this interesting discussion around resources and how we want to allocate our resources, but also naming what's important for us. And so I said, like, for you, have you thought about what you want someday? Mm-hmm. You know, when you're a grown up and you get to make decisions. And she was like, you know, well, I wouldn't mind having a small space so that then I could go on like lots of adventures and travel, because I like doing, you know, and interesting. And it's not to say that that family member doesn't get to travel as well, but it is, especially with our kids and to ourselves, it's being able to name why we've made the decisions that we have. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that helps with that. I talk about like keeping up with the Joneses. Mm-hmm. I do feel like when you are pretty secure in why you've made the decisions that you have, or what it is that you're working towards or looking towards, how you want the next season of life to look. I do feel like that is really powerful, because one of the things for me is, in our family, I just never wanted to feel like my hand was forced, that I was like forced into doing something. Mm-hmm. So I really like choice and I like to have margin in my life about, like, in the book, the idea of having choice time, even though these, you know, 8 minute, you know, spurts at a time. But I feel like so often when we're focused on what we think that others think that we should have, the perception of where we should be in life, how much money we should be earning, the positional responsibility that we should have at work, the type of car that we should be driving, any one of those decisions can have a huge impact on the rest of your life, and it can cause that like internal mess that you're feeling. So I do think that that is it's just so important. It relates to budgeting. Mm-hmm. It relates to tidying, but it really is this like life philosophy mm-hmm. that's important to establish.
Yeah. And it started in small ways for you, but as time has gone on, it's become so much more than just, you know, the hazard rearranging your bedroom and then starting with your closet. It kind of, in the book, you call it the domino effect of you can make these small initial changes, but then as you do those, it's not just that it gets easier or you become more experienced, but you craft what that just enough definition is for you and what those priorities are. And so you get more confident each time too, with as yeah. you go from an easier space to a harder space, by the time you get from, you know, the closet into the kitchen or whatever it is, you've learned things about yourself along the way. So you can make a quicker, more confident decision in a more challenging space. So I think I gave it away already. Tell us where you started when you decided I need to declutter and tidy up these different zones and spaces in our home. What did you begin with? And do you recommend that for other people too?
I mean, I started with an implosion, which I wouldn't really recommend, although it did force my hand. And one of the like objects that took on a lot of meaning in that switch of the bedrooms was this huge, bulky wardrobe that I had, where it had all of my clothing. I was so excited because I finally did not share a space with my wife. We didn't share a dresser. We didn't share any sort of closet because, frankly, our apartment doesn't have one. Mm-hmm. But that was the biggest issue to deal with during the room switch, because it could go one of two places. It could literally block the window in our new tiny bedroom, or it could literally block the walkway. Mm-hmm. And so I knew if this bedroom switch was going to be successful, I had to tackle this wardrobe. And it's when I made the decision to sort of reconfigure this very tiny 14-inch wide closet by 7-foot tall space, because I knew if I can unload my wardrobe, I can sort of tackle what is all in there. That will then allow us to have this new bedroom space that could potentially work mm-hmm. for us longer term. Mm-hmm. At the time, we had two little girls in the largest bedroom. We now have three, mm-hmm. and they're in this triple bunk. They have this triple wardrobe system. But to your point about where to start, I mean, I started with my clothing, because clothing is a really personal sort of category of items that you can pretty much instinctively go in and you can clear, and then you can start to sort based on what you like, what you don't like, what fits, what doesn't fit, the fabrics that you like, the colors that you like. And it's personal in that you don't have to have someone else going through your stuff. But as I outline in the book, like, I think the big thing is whenever you take on a decluttering project, it's really interrogating what it is that you learn about yourself through the process. You ask yourself questions, you try to learn, and then you see how you can apply those set of skills to other more complex areas. And the domino effect, it's always playing out in our apartment. My wife and I had a good sort of cry about it. The girls were finished with their play kitchen. And so we gifted it to a family. One of our really good friends, their daughter was turning 4. She really wanted a play kitchen. They didn't have one. And so we thought, let's give it to her. When we moved that out, it then allowed us to move a bookcase that we had in our living room into the playroom, which set up this new sort of like playroom organization shelf. We were also able to then bring down, we had these like play couches in the girls' bedroom that were stored on top of the wardrobe. It was out of sight, out of mind. They were never able to play with it. We brought that into the playroom. We had been storing our travel gear in the top of my wife's closet. We were then able to get new baskets to go on top of the wardrobe where the playroom, you know, furniture was. Opened up space in my wife's wardrobe, in her closet. So you can see how one sort of decision can then have an inherent impact on the other. And when you apply something very sort of like physical, like your square footage or space or how you allocate or how you zone, you then think about what other domino effects could I have in place in my own life? Mm-hmm. And what does it mean? Like for me, when I stepped back from being an admin to a teacher, that meant that I gained a month in the summer with my kids. Like that is time. It's such a precious gift that then opened up all of these other areas. And sometimes when you're in the mess, it's really hard to step back. But I really do encourage people, sometimes you just have to take that one seemingly small step forward mm-hmm. or backwards. Mm-hmm. Just see then what the ripple effect mm-hmm. can be.
Yeah.
If you're not paid once a month, why are you budgeting that way? A monthly budget ignores the fact that sometimes your expenses are due before the next paycheck is available. A pay period budget is built around your unique pay schedules so that your money doesn't feel like a mess. Create an accurate, realistic plan for getting the most out of each paycheck. Get started budgeting by pay period today with the best-selling budget template and mini course from me, Debt-Free Mom. It's available for just $9 at debtfreemom.co/template. I spent years feeling frustrated that my money wasn't working the way it should. It wasn't until I discovered the magic of budgeting by pay period rather than by month that my money started to feel stable. Pay Period Budget Academy is my signature budgeting course that helps hundreds of women take control of their home finances. Join today at debtfreemom.co/PBA and use the code podcast at checkout to get 20% off your membership.
Yeah, that you don't have to do it all at once, and it doesn't have to be, it's not permanent either, right? Like I like when people are afraid of making any sort of change, I always like to encourage them to think of it like an experiment, that I'm going to commit to this for a very short set amount of time. And, you know, in your room's example, if it truly didn't work, we gain new information about the fact that we tried this and we know it doesn't work. And now we can go back, you can revert back to what you had been doing with confidence that it is the best arrangement in your home, right? Making those, just being willing to try, I think is the big thing that I like to, I hope people get that lifelong learner mentality of like, yeah. When I try this, if it doesn't go well, I still walk out of it having learned something, because now I know, instead of wondering if something will or won't work for me, I now know for a fact that it will or won't work in that season for us. The last little section of the book, and we're kind of flying over, people listening, please pre-order the book and read it, because I can't do it justice in this 1 hour that I have. But the one other one that I really wanted to highlight is a chapter that you have called Stop Doing All the Work. And yeah. It's about the work in the home and the work outside of the home and how to figure out who should do what, or should we be doing it at all, I think are the questions. And it's for anyone in any living arrangement, no matter who you live with or live alone. I loved your little line about if you live with your cat, telling them to tidy up their litter. So you mentioned in that chapter, the kind of the three options you give for when there's a responsibility: you can share it, you can outsource mm-hmm. it, or you can stop. Can you give us a little, what do each of those three things mean if we're trying to sort through all those responsibilities in the home?
Yeah. So when we're talking about work, obviously there's work outside of the home, but then there's also so much work that goes into just being able to like sustain life, not only for you, but if you're living with children, if you're living with a spouse, if you're living with an elderly parent, right. You know, there's so much that goes into meal planning and laundry and cooking and cleaning, just, you know, being able to have some semblance of feeling like a human when you're not on the physical clock at work. And so oftentimes I found that we only think of work outside of the home without thinking about everything that goes into sort of like sustaining life. And so I really do think that there are those like three categories. So like one is you can share responsibilities, and it's really thinking about and having those like honest conversations. Like I talk about an example from a Tidy Tips call where it was an adult who had other adult roommates, and the adult roommate didn't know how to clean the bathroom. When it was her week, she would still leave it dirty. And so the roommate was like, should I just clean for her? And oftentimes when we're sharing space with people, sort of to borrow the sharing the work sort of question, like we don't actually have the conversations around what is it going to look like to live in this space mm-hmm. together? Who is going to be responsible for what? How are we going to divide responsibilities? And it doesn't mean that it's always 50-50. Mm-hmm. There are different seasons of life where there are different demands placed on people. And even if you live with children, like there are ways to share responsibilities mm-hmm. between folding laundry or helping to clear the table mm-hmm. at the end of the night. My goodness, we're still working on the whole, like, when you take off your clothes and you put it in the dirty clothes, like unrolling it, you
know, separating like, the underwear from the pants.
Yes. That is an example of sharing the responsibility, because everyone wears clothes and everyone needs to learn how to deal with laundry. Mm-hmm. And it is something that is not going to go away. Mm-hmm. You know, then there's also that idea of like outsourcing the responsibilities and being able to think about what might make a difference. And it doesn't mean that you are just paying that person to come in and clean your home or paying for a laundry service, which in New York City is very expensive. Mm-hmm. It could be like the example that I gave in the book of, I use this app based on my mom's recommendation called the Greg app, which tells us when to water our plants. Mm-hmm. That is an example. Like I just got a notification this morning that I had three plants that were ready to be watered. Mm-hmm. And it is wonderful to eliminate the mental load mm-hmm. of me remembering when I need to water and in what quantity. Mm-hmm. But then there's also eliminating responsibilities. And an example I draw in the book is my sister, who is not married. She has a really busy career. She travels at least 2 weeks out of the month. Everybody keeps asking her, so when are you going to buy a house? When are you going to buy a house? When are you going to stop renting? And she finally had to say to people, I don't want to own a house right now. I don't want to take care of the yard. Mm-hmm. I really like that when something goes wrong, I'm able to call maintenance and they come in and fix it for me. Mm-hmm. And so that was powerful for her mm-hmm. of being able to say, I don't want this right now. Mm-hmm. And that is an example of eliminating mm-hmm. the work. And the, you know, the sort of joke, the silver lining to my parents' divorce is that I talk about how when I was a kid, my sisters and I would have two sets of yard work. And so when I became an adult, I was like, I don't want yard
work. Zero yard work.
Which is why I moved to New York City and Central Park is now my yard. And I can go and enjoy it, but I don't have to take care of it. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to think about all those different layers and all those different strategies for what you can do when you feel really overwhelmed. And oftentimes, if you can think about, can you share responsibilities, eliminate those responsibilities, or can you outsource some mm-hmm. of the work? That's at least an entry point.
Sometimes it just takes being told to pause and actually analyze what you're doing, what you have, you know, instead of defaulting to, oh, I just need to take care of this because it's just on me, it's all on me. I feel like I kind of came late to the game of realizing how capable kids are. And not only how capable they are, but they love a job. Like they, unlike adults where if you're like, oh my goodness, like, you know, pick up all the sticks in the yard, I would rather, you know, cut off my left hand. Kids are like, oh my gosh, I would love to pick up all the sticks in the yard. Yeah. And so just small things. Tomorrow's our garbage day. And we had two garbage bins. It was so lovely to tell my older boys, each of you grab a bin and run it to the curb. And they made a little race and they got it there. Yeah. As you're coming out of that baby and toddler phase, you're just used to being the only one who can do it. And then to stop yourself and pause and be like, they are just as capable of grabbing that can and putting it to the curb. In the process of us bringing them into those jobs more, I've found more often than not, they actually do it and it's done. When they are a participating mm-hmm. member in the family, which not only serves our family now, but then serves them into adulthood too, to hopefully be more mindful adults of what are the things that I can contribute to? What are the things that I can outsource? And what are the things I can let go of? I related a lot to Emily when you talked about being the analytical one who sits and I would much rather do computer work than anything physical. And so I'm like, yeah, I'll pay the bills. I'll make the phone call. So knowing your strengths and knowing that you are good at things that she's not and vice versa. And then those things can blend beautifully into a home and make it work together without having to worry about it being equal.
And just because you had the conversation once doesn't mean that you aren't mm-hmm. going to need to have it mm-hmm. again. And even like with your kids, like as they get older and more capable, there are conversations around, you know, the work that you've taken on, the work mm-hmm. that you need to take them on and how we're all like working together. Mm-hmm. Another silly example is we finally figured out the Wi-Fi light bulbs or not Wi-Fi light bulbs that will like connect to your like Alexa. The girls have never been able to turn on the light in their playroom because of our old switches. Mm-hmm. And I was like, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. You can buy light bulbs that are not that much more expensive.
They're like almost the same as a regular bulb.
We've been in this apartment for over 10 years and I can't tell you like the headache because we have no plugs that actually work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the past couple of weeks, we've eliminated the work turning on and off the lights and being able to time it. And, you know, so that it just goes off automatically. Those are little things. But when you start to notice and even just putting that into your sort of work vocabulary of the idea of share, outsource, eliminate, mm-hmm. share, outsource, eliminate, that can really be sort of transformational mm-hmm. as you're thinking about everything that has to be done. Because mm-hmm. sometimes a light switch and the fact that you are always told that you have to turn it on and off for your children mm-hmm. can just drive you mad. And now I can just say, Alexa, turn mm-hmm. on the playroom mm-hmm. or whatever.
And my last point was to spend money to solve problems instead of just buying another shirt, buying another, yeah. you know, going out for recreation, that the power of creative problem solving and choice, that we can like have thoughtful pauses where we, when we give ourselves the space to clear out our mind and clear out our space, we can actually identify what some of the problems are. You'd laugh and say, you know, for 10 years, we have this light switch that didn't work. It took realizing that there was a solution out there to yeah. even realize yeah. how much of a burden that had been, you know, without you being able to articulate it. Some minimalism circles, it's just all spending is bad. And so I love the idea of framing it as, how can my money solve a problem instead of just be used to add something to my home that I don't actually need, that's not another decor item. And as we do that, we feel the power of what our money is able to do for us, having the choices, that you just want the options, and that money, yeah. that keeping that money on hand and keeping that margin, that space in our life and in our budget can allow us those options.
Yeah, like going back to writing the book and the intensity of like editing, which is its whole sort of like beast to take on. We did use the power of ordering out food or like ordering food, but we quickly realized that we didn't need to spend $15 on each girl to get them like cheese quesadilla and French fries. Mm-hmm. So we would make a quick meal for them, put them to bed, and then we had the delivery ordered after they went to bed. It was like, it was just an approach that was beautiful because yep. one, my wife and I had a good meal. Two, we could sit down and have a really quick like date night or connection time mm-hmm. before the intensity of the other work mm-hmm. unfolded. Mm-hmm. But like budget wise, we didn't need to spend all of that money mm-hmm. on the girls. Mm-hmm. We could just make them something quick and easy at home. And so for a season, mm-hmm. that is what we had to do. And we really had to name for ourselves like, what is the burden? What is the pain point? What is the stressor right now? And it's different for everyone. Mm-hmm. For some people, it's laundry. For others, it's cleaning the house. For some, it's just like having a really good meal, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it may be. It may be having a clean car. Mm-hmm. And instead of you washing it, you take it to the car mm-hmm. wash. Those are all things. But when you can identify in the particular season, what's a pain point, and then think creatively mm-hmm. of how you can use your resources, even something like knowing that every Wednesday you're going to stop and pick up coffee mm-hmm. on the way to work mm-hmm. may just be that little midweek lift mm-hmm. that you need that just helps you get from point A to point B. And that's another smaller, like $2.50 or mm-hmm. if your other places, a $7 cup of coffee. But like that may be something that just gives you a little bit of joy that helps you get through the really mundane mm-hmm. season in creative problem solving. With money can help.
When you have your definition of just enough in all these areas that other people tend to be constantly buying in, you have the margin in your, you know, in your own home and in your budget to make room for those things that might feel like a luxury to other people. And so, you know, when you kind of point out you had the, what was it, 30 items for 30 months, you know, for yeah. 30 days that you wore, yes. you know, not constantly ordering the next thing all the time, you can create space in your money. That shopping might feel good for 5 seconds when we click buy now or when we walk in the store. But if we can instead shift that money towards solving a problem that's long term, we just yeah. make our money more efficient and more powerful yeah. for us in yeah. our lives. I barely even scratched the surface of the second half of your book. I feel like this was just a part one conversation. In the second half, you are so practical about laying out, once you've laid the groundwork for all of the, really the hard work of the mentality and the clearing out of your mind and your space, then you go so practically and systematically through the different rooms that everyone has and how to make them function for you, clutter and then tidy and then clean. I was like, okay, I need to remember that order, having that kind of recipe for this is what I do in this order, and that will create a routine that's the least amount of effort with the most amount of payoff. Like I said at the beginning, I enjoyed every bit of reading this book. And I'm thankful for you and for how you wrote this and the time that you, and like you said in the acknowledgement, that Emily could have been a co-author on the book of what your family put into putting this together.
Yeah, no, thanks. And, you know, as I always say, like, we're a real family. We live in New York City. I'm a teacher by day. We have three kids. We're trying to balance work and family and making space for adventure. And I like, you know, especially in the second half of the book, it's like the more that we can sort of make space for what's important, the more that we can establish these systems, these zones that our kids can understand. When things have a place, it just helps to free up the thinking processes for the much more important things. That it's like, if you can't find your shoes, you're not really able to think about, is this career move the best career right now? You know, like, mental clutter and the physical clutter go hand in hand. And so we're really just trying to make space for what's actually important, which is like living our best lives, enjoying the adventures, enjoying our city, enjoying our kids in the age that they are, enjoying our work, but finding value, you know, outside of that pursuit of more for the sake of having more.
Yeah. And I think the reason this can resonate so well with other people is that you wrote it in the midst of what most people would classify as the hardest season that a person can go through, of like the parenting multiple little ones at the same time while working. You wrote it in the midst of that survival. And so for all of us, we can say, oh, I can tidy up these little corners of my life even while I'm in that hard season. And so I think it lends credibility to your story. And I'm hoping that anyone listening will read it.
Yeah. So January 7th is the launch day. That's when it goes into the world. And it's, you know, now we're in that, like, that anticipation, you know, sort of stage of how will people receive it? Will it be helpful? I hope that it will, but more so, as I mentioned, like, I hope that they see that this is an account of a real dad, you know, had some pretty low lows, but also learned how to make sense of the mess that was his life. And that also this can be a guide for those who are also experiencing some messes too, because we all have experienced messes. We will all experience messes again. You know, there are ways in which we can learn from the experiences that we've had. So it's a joy to have been able to write this. And now I'm excited to get it into the hands of people and to hopefully people can tidy up their lives too.
Tyler's book is available for purchase now at thetidydad.com. And you can follow him on Instagram at tidydad. The link to the book is also in the show notes. Thanks for listening to the Debt-Free Mom podcast. If you want to join me as a guest on the show, go to dfmpodcast.com. The Debt-Free Mom podcast is hosted by me, Carly Hill, and is produced, edited, and mixed by Kyle Hill. Music for this episode was written by Kyle Hill. Hit subscribe wherever you're listening to join in with every new episode as we grow our confidence and contentment in our personal finances.